and welcome to Gen Extemporaneous. This is a podcast where I come up with an idea, I do some research, I grab a bottle of wine, I bring everything to Mark, and he pontificates. In this episode, our 100th, we are giving you a retrospective. We'll talk about our history, highlight a few of our favorite podcast moments, talk about how the sausage gets made, discuss some of our future plans, and we're even going to share bits from our very first podcast, one that I have removed from our playlist due to dodgy sound quality, because we want you to be able to laugh along with us at how far we've come in a relatively short amount of time. We thank you for coming to listen to us each week, and we ask that if you do like us, please share us with a friend. Hi, Mark Snedeker.
Hello, Christina LaRusso.
Oh,
you said sausage. Yeah. She also said bits.
Yeah. You whacked off.
You know what would be funny? It would be funny if I had only pontificated 100 times in the period of time when we've done this.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, I pontificate way more than that.
Oh my God, you pontificate all the time. It's constant.
Yeah, so this is really just you harnessing the wind, as it were, right? It's like, yes. Mark's going to pontificate. We might as well record some of it.
That's right. Well, it's true. It's true. So this is our 100th episode.
God damn.
And we are really trying to get this right, everyone. And it's taking us a little bit of time to do it. So I hope this is the one.
No complaints from me.
I know. I am super excited
to record this just as many goddamn times as you want.
You've done really, really good, because he knows sometimes when the episode really matters, he knows better than to fight with me.
It's just like stepping on the third rail.
It would be like if you had fought back with me on Duran Duran. Rio turns 40.
Rip my head off and cast it away.
Yeah, definitely not. All right. So let's just dive right into a little bit of our history and kind of some of the behind the scenes. How did we decide to do what we did? And originally, our podcast was not called Gen Extemporaneous. It was called Extemporaneous.
Yes. Very different because of the gen.
It is. The extemporaneous part sticks, though. And the original concept was for it to be you using your puddle of knowledge,
such as it is,
to talk about whatever subject the challenge would be, that I would bring a subject to you.
It was like a game show.
Yeah.
And
you would riff on this subject. Yeah. And that was kind of our original concept.
And then you're like, well, maybe your puddle of knowledge isn't quite as good as I had expected.
Let's talk about what happened. So when I first met Mark, I had just probably within the year before that started listening to podcasts. A lot. And yeah. I listened to, there were two that were really high in my rotation. One is called True Crime Obsessed.
Right.
And it is a comedy podcast with two very witty hosts who banter like crazy, and they're hilariously funny about serious subjects, which is true crime.
Right.
The other podcast that I listened to was called You're Wrong About. And at the time, it had two co-hosts, regular co-hosts, Sarah Marshall and Michael Hobbs. And they would select a topic, for instance, Monica Lewinsky.
Yep.
Tell you, here's what you think you know, but here's why you're wrong about what you know. And it was just a great, smart, really clever.
Very informative, mm-hmm. but entertaining.
Entertaining, and you came away kind of learning something. I loved that format as well. But I wasn't thinking about, oh, I like that format, I want to do that. I just enjoyed those podcasts.
Yeah, and then just going to listen.
When Mark and I first hung out, the very first time that we hung out, Mark is extremely funny in person. And you can hear
not
it, obviously.
Like, not like on the podcast, but really good in person.
No. But I mean, it's constant. So what you have to know about Mark is that there's very few serious moments ever.
Unless I'm super mad.
Well, yeah. And even then you'll crack jokes sometimes. Yeah. I mean, it's not as funny. But
yeah, when they're at your expense.
No. Yeah. It's not nice, but he is extremely funny. So when we were chatting, it reminded me quite a bit of the way that Jillian and Patrick on True Crime Obsessed bantered.
Girl.
So if you go back to some of our early episodes, and maybe I'll put a snippet in here.
It was basically us doing an impression of that.
It was me, mainly me, and I would be like,
hey, girl.
Hey, girl.
And me being the good sport, I'm just like, okay, I guess I'm girl. I guess I'll just be okay with that.
Your sister loved that.
I know.
She thought that was hilarious. Okay.
She's like, I had no idea Mark was so gender fluid.
But it was hilarious. And sometimes I will still say that to you, but it's, we've found our own voices at this point. All right.
Correct.
So what I said to him when we first met, the very first night we were hanging out, I said, have you ever considered doing a podcast? Now, Mark said,
when I was in college, I was also funny, although I was more derivative in college, I think, because I was basically stealing like, Eddie Murphy's act or Monty Python or something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was, I'm funny, whatever. So people would always say, oh, Mark, you're so funny. You should be a stand-up comedian. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, no, you have no idea how different that is from telling jokes to your friends to going up on stage with hostile drunk people and trying to tell them jokes, mm-hmm. prepared jokes. Mm-hmm. I don't really do prepared jokes very well, right? That's not really my thing. And I likened it to kind of judo. In judo, you use your opponent's momentum against them. It's a lot easier than walking over and just picking them up dead weight and throwing them. So when I'm with friends, they're predisposed to like me and to think I'm funny. So it's a lot easier to get them laughing than it would be, a stony-faced crowd of drunk people in New York. And I never, never really envisioned me going through that grind, because you really have to do that to get good. You have to go to all the clubs. You have to bomb. People will boo you off the stage.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Did you ever at one time, because you seem to know a lot about that, did you ever at one time consider maybe? Because it feels like to me, it feels like to me that you kind of maybe took them seriously and went, well, what would that entail? And then you kind of went, probably that's not
for me. I mean, like, I could look at the finished product and go, oh, I could be on the Tonight Show. That would be awesome, right? But then I'm like, what are the steps to get there? And mm-hmm. I'd seen enough like movies about comedians mm-hmm. and Comedy Central was very big on showing stand-ups then, right? Mm-hmm. And it looked easy then, but I knew for a fact it couldn't possibly be. Mm-hmm. And I never really felt like, could I just sit down and write a good 15-minute, bit of a piece of material? I don't know. And I was never really willing to try to find out that I couldn't mm-hmm. because that's what I like. I like my potential. Mm-hmm. And I don't like really testing that potential up against reality.
Of course. Right? You do.
That's why I still have in the back of my mind, if I really worked hard, I could probably dunk. But I'm not really willing to put in the work, and I don't really want to find out that that is untrue.
Okay, so stand up was outside of the realm of possibility right. in your mind. So then when I said to you, have you ever thought of podcasting? You said,
no, I mean, I really haven't because it just seems very inaccessible, mm-hmm. right? I was just like, could I do it? Maybe, but I don't really see a path.
Right.
I just assumed that was just an impossible barrier.
Do you think that that's because you don't like to have to do the work that it would take to get
it
there?
That is at least 80% of it.
Yeah. In the scope
I didn't really
of podcasting.
Even understand what work would be involved there.
Yeah.
Right. I just figured if somebody asked me to come on their podcast that they'd already done all the work for and they just needed me to come in and be funny for a while, I could do that. But you were saying, would you like to do a podcast? And I'm like, I don't even know the first thing about it.
Here's the difference between you and I. And I've been giving
there are many.
Well, as I started thinking about this 100th episode, I've been giving this a lot of thought because previously to this, where I'm about to say this, I would have always said to you, I saw the potential for you, but not for myself. I didn't. And because our format was originally going to be one way, and we'll get there in a second. Upon reflection, what I realize is that when I was listening to these podcasts that I listened to, I recognized that these people were not celebrities. They were just people. They were just Jillian and Patrick. Patrick had written a book or whatever else, and they had done some theater, but they were just people. These weren't like celebrities.
Right. It's not like Jon Stewart is doing a podcast.
Right. Right. And then Sarah and Michael, both journalists or writers, but not, they're not doing the nightly news, right?
Right,
so these aren't celebrities.
Not on-air personalities.
No.
Yet.
And particularly, you're wrong about early on had some sound quality issues.
Oh, so we can identify with that.
Yes, we can. And it was kind of rough. And I remember listening to this and saying to myself, so these are just people doing this. And this is part of the thing that is interesting to me. So sort of one, if I was going to do an arc or, and we would do, say, like gig economy, I would look at podcasters and say, well, there are podcasters who just really come up out of nowhere. And they make decent money. They can make a living doing that. That is not us, everyone.
Yeah, we have not discovered that formula yet.
But
we can buy some coffee.
Yeah.
That's good.
So what's interesting to me is exactly the kind of episode that we are doing here, which is if they would have talked about, here's how we do this. here. And yeah. Patrick and Jillian have talked a little bit about that. Sarah and Michael never did. But, and it would totally be for me to look at that as a creative outlet. As a younger person, I had hoped to, in fact, I was accepted into Syracuse University to go to journalism school.
Yeah.
And I ended up not going. But I always wanted to be in journalism, in print journalism. But still, I thought, this would be something interesting. I never imagined being the host. I would have fancied myself being doing what I do, but not hosting, not talking. I would have been behind the scenes.
I taught you a lesson there, didn't I?
Well, ultimately, I got you to the point where you're like, you know, I would do it, but like, how would that work? I said, let me do all that research for you.
That's a brilliant strategy.
I'm happy to look into that, which is what I did. So I started digging into, you know, what kind of equipment we would need. What are the hosting? How do you do it? How do you build a podcast? It's pretty easy, honestly. There's some fussy little bits to it, but it's pretty easy. Yeah. Of course, we immediately broke several rules.
As we are wont to do.
One of which, and the most probably important thing, is we said, we don't want to be stuck in a niche.
Yeah, we just want to be free flowing.
We want to be able to have...
Don't tread on me.
Right. So originally we thought the idea would be that Mark would have a rotating door of co-hosts where Mark would be Mark and chat and riff with these co-hosts. But before we could do that, we had to figure out what the hell we were doing. So I became the stand-in co-host initially, and we were going to do some practice stuff, which is what we did.
We were just sitting on my couch with...
At first a phone. Then we got a kind of cheap mixing board and two microphones, two turntables and a microphone.
Where it's at.
And also a fuck ton of wine, because now at this point we were in COVID.
And we were drinking like fish.
Holy shit.
We were buying wine by the case. I'm not even joking.
No, he's not kidding.
And we would just be like, okay, let's just crack open. I mean, that's where the tagline came from, because
you bring a bottle of wine.
It was more than a bottle of wine.
Oh yeah. Most nights it was like two and a half bottles of wine.
It was a lot of fucking wine.
There were a lot of
wine. It was great.
It was fun, but it was, you know,
Not
great for our livers. And it honestly, there were a couple that were quite sloppy.
Oh, we were just like too sloppy.
There were some sloppy.
Let me tell you another thing I was thinking about, you podcast lady.
So we finally pulled it all together and we launched Extemporaneous on September 7th, 2020. Silicone Lube.
Just but nobody has a giving silicone that a shout shower.
Out. No, I know, but I'm just
like,
giving
why
that
would you have that installed in your house? Well, for the lubrication.
Okay. I don't care about being clean.
Right. I'm not worried about shampooing my hair. I'm just looking to get it on in the shower.
In the shower. I mean, all about the shower.
Yeah.
Who would? No.
So you have like hot, cold, and silicone.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Extemporaneous. This is a podcast where each week I research a topic of my choice, grab a bottle of wine or the odd tequila sunrise, and present both to Mark. Mark's job is to draw on his vast, if shallow, knowledge base and pontificate. Okay, this sounds like it's super serious, but don't worry. We are going to have so many laughs, you guys, I promise, because Mark is super funny. And hopefully we'll get you thinking about some stuff too. This week, we are talking about cancel culture. And you know what? Buckle the fuck in, because we are also going to talk about loofahs as a sex toy, marrying your own children, and whether or not the left is devouring itself on the altar of social justice. In the end, we are asking, is cancel culture a powerful weapon in the social justice arsenal, or simply a clever way for the hegemony to trick us into believing we are agents of change, when in reality, nothing ever really changes? Okay, so cancel culture.
And it came from roughly 12 hours of practice material about cancel culture.
Cut it down to about an hour?
We cut it down to 30 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Because initially we thought 30 minutes would be easy for people to consume.
Yeah.
As I mentioned in the introduction, I've taken that episode out of our rotation because the sound quality is just very bad.
I don't care.
But I'm going to play...
Like Robert Johnson doesn't take his old recordings out of, you know, he's like... Sounds like he's singing in a tin can.
Well, but that's how it is.
But
ours shouldn't have been
ours
like
was,
that.
Ours was is just like.
What we did discover in that first episode were the sounds that celebrities make when they're being stabbed.
I had this kind of running joke that, we came up with at a bar.
Okay, so I'm going to play that for everyone so that you can hear what it sounds like.
Cha! Wait, what are the sting? Sting getting stabbed. Do it.
Ow!
Prince getting stabbed.
Ow!
Michael Jackson getting stabbed.
Ow!
Who else do we have?
Billy Idol.
Billy Idol getting stabbed.
Ow! Ow!
It's so that's good. Right.
I got stabbed. Wow. Wow.
Oh, you're so 80s.
So, and I had one other one that it must have come later in the recording where
it came later in another episode.
Now, I'm not going to say who this is. People have to guess. Ow. Jesus.
I just love it. I mean, how can they guess?
Huh?
They can't tell us.
That's a great impression.
It is a great impression. Okay, we'll leave it and see if anybody listens that come to our Twitter and tell us who you think it is. Maybe we'll send you a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Gen Extemporaneous.
So that was in the first episode.
That whole episode, one of the best jokes that we have. It's tragic that I have to keep that off the air because it's just such a bad thing.
Too soon.
No, but the one of the best jokes that you ever made was the one about Woody Allen.
It's pretty sketch.
What, like marrying his stepdaughter?
Yeah.
I mean, that's Mary a little, it's very weird. Why would you, because he'd known her since she was a very young girl.
Right.
So, anyway.
Now look, I support looking down, not up. You know that?
I do know
but
that about
not anymore. Like that. Don't look down your own family tree. Like, don't look down the dinner table.
Oh, my God.
So, all right. We published this. And then right away, what we were hearing as feedback, a lot of people said you two have really good chemistry, which is nice. You know, it's always nice to hear that. First of all, when I listen to a podcast, I like to listen to two host podcasts because I like to hear the conversation, because then I like to think to myself, I'd like to enter into that conversation.
Right. It's not just, you're not just being spoken to. You can put yourself in the shoes of one of the participants and say, okay, yeah, I could be in this conversation and here's what I would say if I were in it.
Right.
Type of thing.
Right. And we get a lot of that feedback as well. Like absolutely. I listen to your podcast and I talk along with you. At this juncture, I ended up creating a little bit more structure so that I come to now the episode with an outline.
Oh, now you have
a pretty extensive outline. Because before it was just going to be both of us. Like I would bring a topic to you. Presumably it would be a topic I knew about.
And maybe would Google one thing or something.
Well, now I do a lot of background. I do a lot of research. Yeah. I put together a pretty extensive outline. That outline is generally for me.
Yeah.
And Mark pontificates. The real truth is that Mark does almost everything here extemporaneously unless I say to him,
you have to at least know what the fuck I'm talking about.
Yeah, you
got to
watch this documentary, because we did do some things where in the early days, I don't know, that you would, there were sometimes I thought, I don't think you really watched this documentary.
I'm not sure. I'm like, oh yeah, that guy. That was really interesting when they did that thing.
One thing that I did early on that cracked me up is I came with 10 pages of notes and Mark came with, no kidding, a receipt, and he had some words scribbled on
it's like a McDonald's receipt that I had in my car. I just wrote like four words on the back of it.
Like, what the hell?
There is definitely a disparity in prep time.
Ultimately, we decided that we would organize the podcast around arcs, and those arcs would contain multiple episodes. And we keep revisiting those arcs. So even though in the beginning we had the War on Science, that doesn't mean that we're not going to do a War on Science episode that would fit, you know, that would ultimately fit into that arc. It's just, you know, it's not contiguous with the first, four episodes or whatever that was.
I mean, we are still, you know, a little bit wild and free.
We are. So within these arcs, and some of our arcs have been War on Science, Crisis of Meaning. We started getting into Gen X nostalgia.
80s pop culture.
Which is Gen X nostalgia. Christina's love child, which be like history, gender studies, sexuality stuff. That's all going to be.
She's real into that.
That's my stuff. And then we've done some true crime-ish stuff. So not true crime necessarily.
But like meta true crime.
Meta true crime. So we got this structure put together. And then we decided, well, I guess I'm going to just be the co-host. But I don't remember how we came to that conclusion.
I think you just said
to me, you have to be the co-host.
Yeah, you do the co-host because you're great.
And here we are. And it's been 100 episodes. And And I have no inclination to say, well, you know, I've got only like a couple more episodes in me. It's 100 episodes. It's a lot of work. For the hour that you hear, and sometimes it's maybe an hour and 15.
Whatever.
I think at the longest we've been an hour and a half, but that's unusual that we do that. So mainly it's between an hour and 15. And for that hour and an hour or hour and 15, I've done probably 8 hours of background research.
Yep.
Sometimes even more. And then we do the 2 hours of recording usually.
To cut it down to an hour.
To cut it down to an hour and a half to cut it down to an hour. And then I do
all the posts.
4 hours of editing. Now, my editing time has decreased. I've gotten much better and faster at editing. But in the early days, I would have to do like 8 hours of editing because I was kind of trying to work around. We had a lot of sound issues.
We did. We had a lot of echoes, things like that. And, you know, we were just starting off in the podcast, so we had a lot of ums and ahs and
We still do.
Or I wasn't close enough to the microphone.
But what we, and then we had, you know, again, kind of the wrong equipment. We finally got that figured out.
We would set up the studio. We would get this horrible echo. So, I mean, the studio ended up looking like a kid's pillow fort.
It really did.
There's like blankets everywhere and foam nailed to the wall.
And if I can find it, I will put it in. But there's a part where I just crack up and I say to him, I've got to mention this. Mark was actually
in a closet.
In a closet with a blanket over himself and the microphone because we had these great, strong, amazing microphones.
Super expensive microphones.
Microphones, but they picked up every echo that there was.
Way too sensitive. So, aspiring podcasters, if you're thinking about the Blue Yeti,
think again.
You better be in a soundproof booth. And it'll be amazing there, but in the converted Mozart's bedroom.
It did not work.
It did not work.
Especially with two of them. All right. So finally, we have our podcast. We have the setup correct, the sound setup. We have the editing getting better and slicker. And then we decide, all right, we keep on all of these episodes kind of leaning into this Gen X thing.
Right. And Podcast 101 does tell you should narrow your niche.
You should have a niche. So what we've done is we've tagged Gen on the front of our podcast.
So for Gen X branding, the first thing you want to do is you get your product name that describes it, and then you slightly misspell it, right?
It's like
if it's bright, it's B-R-I-T-E. Mm-hmm. Then that's what you're talking about. You go portmanteau, right? Mm-hmm. You get two words, and you mash them together, possibly with some random capitalization in there. Plus, we have, you know, pretty sweet logo, and we have our own theme song.
We do have our own theme song, and our theme song, our first episode with our theme song was episode 4, and that was written by
Tom Snedeker.
Yes. He is the, what does he play? Lead guitar and singer
for the band The Kind, which is a mostly Grateful Dead cover band.
But they do some of their own music.
And in Blacksburg, Virginia, and he's been playing with them since like 1985.
Yep.
So we went to him and we're like, can you do a podcast theme for us?
And he was so happy to do it for us for the price of a pizza dinner for his family. Thanks, Tom.
To me, it sounded like you asked Mark Knopfler to go and create a jingle for a really cool city's morning show.
Yeah.
So that's Good Morning Austin.
As I said, that debuted on episode 4. Episode 49 was the official rebranding when we became Gen Extemporaneous.
Right on.
And I really like that name.
Oh, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about favorite episodes. So your third favorite episode
is Boob Juice.
Episode 6 is Boob Juice. Tell us a little bit about Boob Juice. What arc did that fit into?
So that's in our War on Science.
Wait, hang on, everyone. I need another cocktail, oh, Mark. Yeah. I'll need another cocktail. Okay.
One vodka tonic later.
It's true. I'm starting my second vodka tonic, everyone. It's not a bottle of wine. Sometimes it's cocktails.
Yeah, sometimes we do cocktails. Sometimes we do Death Star Aritas, which is one of my favorites.
That is. Tell me about the War and Science arc.
Okay, so we decided pretty early on that one of the things I would really like to talk about was the War on Science. You know, we had this tendency that you see even more now where, you know, we were just rejecting intellectual authority and academic authority. So I wanted to talk about, you know, War on Science because philosophy of science was really my favorite thing in college. Mm-hmm. And you had watched a documentary.
Unwell. It's called Unwell on Netflix.
Yeah. And it was a really good documentary. But one of the things that was on there was adults drinking breast milk for various reasons.
Right.
And that was A, hilarious inherently. Second, boobs. I mean, everybody loves boobs.
Mark really thought that this was going to really like lean into boobs in a very different way.
I thought it was going to be much sexier than it ended up being.
It took us multiple episodes before we got to the sex positivity episode where it kind of got to the sexy boob stuff.
Yeah.
Adult breastfeeding. That was, we did another one much later on that, but
So, you know, boobs. And it was really just stunning that people would do this. And it's these guys that, like, some guys were like, drink it like it was going to help them work out, right? Which is a huge, huge misunderstanding of the science. Mother's milk does help grow.
Mother's milk does help grow babies.
Babies and baby muscles and baby brains, but it doesn't really do anything for you as an adult other than give you a certain amount of fat and protein.
No, the guy was like, I'm in the gym 25 hours a day.
Yeah, whatever it was.
It's the boob juice.
Yeah.
No, dude, you're just hitting the gym a lot.
Yeah, and you have some weird kink about breast milk. So then he goes onto this Facebook group, and he finds someone who's willing to deal.
Deal with him, and it's true, and he makes it into, that's that cringy scene.
He makes it so fucking weird for this lady. So she comes, fully prepared, they've agreed on a price, she comes to this, you know,
50 cents an ounce, by the way.
What? I don't even know if that's good or bad. And I feel like if
she, I feel like she could have gotten a buck. Yeah,
I feel like that's a little underpaying for something that he definitely cannot get on his own. But he meets her in this diner, and then he starts trying to make these jokes about how it's a drug deal.
I feel like we should whisper. Go in an alley.
Yeah.
There's the cops. This is crazy. You ever met someone in the coffee shop hustling your boob juice?
And she just like looks at him. Now, I don't know if this is like creative editing for this documentary, but to me, in my head, she looks at him like, what in the fuck have I gotten myself into? Who is this Neanderthal that is calling this milk that I produced boob juice? Which, okay, is kind of funny, but you don't say that to the first time you meet the person. And it's a fairly, you know, you got to be a little delicate, right? You're buying her breast milk. Like, try to have a little decorum and not go, hey, pretty funny, you're selling me your boob juice, huh?
That was a good episode. That's your third favorite episode. Yeah. My third favorite episode is called A Shadow on the Door of a Cottage on the Shore. That is episode 9.
If you're going to quote The Police, I mean, you can't get much better than that.
Okay. Right? To me, this episode is my favorite for a couple of reasons. Number one, it launched an arc that I am very fond of and that we continue to return to, which is the crisis of meaning.
We are starting a new podcast series.
Is it about cheeseburgers?
No, it's not about cheeseburgers, although potentially it could be.
All right, good.
I guess it depends on what matters to you in life. This series is going to cover what has been called a crisis of meaning, and we're going to go into in this particular episode, we're going to start talking about what you think a crisis of meaning is, what some other people who actually study it.
You mean like people who don't know how to use Wikipedia?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So then other people who actually study it, people who have been historically significant in the study of meaning as a focal point of a person's life. And we're going to do this by looking at a number of topics. So we're going to have multiple episodes that focus on the different ways that people go looking for meaning.
So in that episode, we're talking, I'm laying the foundation about what sort of the crisis of meaning is and why the crisis of meaning might be happening. And Mark, some of the best episodes that we do is when we argue about stuff.
No,
when
I hate that. I hate when we argue about stuff.
He loves it.
I do.
When we disagree because it creates a tension.
And it's more interesting, I think.
Right. And so we had kind of an argument. It was meant to be a very brief episode, but we got into such a debate, and I thought, this is actually kind of an interesting debate because I bet a lot of people are on either side of this debate. So I decided to keep it as this long episode of Mark and I essentially disagreeing over the role of Christianity in the lives of people throughout time.
Here's the problem with that, and I'm really going to disagree with you. First of all, I think you're mischaracterizing what religion means. I don't think it means you have to. It certainly does focus on Christianity, in particular, focuses on a very clear eschatology. When you die, this is what is going to happen. You will have eternal life and all of the rest, okay?
And don't they say that that's the most important thing?
You're looking at a very Christian aspect. Two, correct. Yes, this is a heavy-duty focal point. But that does not mean that all you do is sit here in this life and wait to die so that you can get to the next one. There are, well, you were raised Catholic, you know this, that there are many good acts that you're meant to do. Like a Protestant religion,
but you're not doing them alone. You're not doing them necessarily because it'll make this world better. You're doing them so that you can get to the better, you can get a nice seat in the next one.
In doing them, you're also making this life better.
Yeah, but that's not what they stressed. If you ask any, and when I'll limit it to the residual
effect. I'm talking over you and I'm going to do it. Don't give me that look.
Enjoy the podcast.
You are clutching your pearls. No, I think that it's fair. Yes, they are definitely saying you're going to, if you do these good works, you will get to heaven faster. Absolutely. You know, it's an easier path for you, but doing the good works helps here on earth. And that's part of what the entirety of Christianity is about. Really, honestly, the foundation of Christianity is to do with constructing a support system for people who felt completely disenfranchised as members of the Roman Empire.
That is not the central feature of that religion.
Oh, my God.
It's not.
What are you talking about?
What's the central belief of Christianity?
I agree with you. The resurrection of the dead and life everlasting.
And creation by God and the Holy Spirit and all that. It is not, hey, you know, let's make this neighborhood a nicer place.
Oh, my God. You're looking at the actual... I'm looking at the actual religion.
That's correct.
Yeah, you're looking at the actual religion. I am asking you to suspend your... Okay. There is the religion, and then there's the history. We both agree that religion is a construct. Are you with me on this? That there is... You and I both agree that there is no God in the sense that people understand it as a Christian God.
Right, but that's irrelevant.
No, it is not irrelevant. Because here's the thing. When this religion was constructed, it was constructed in such a way that it addressed a bunch of social issues. These are what religion does for everyone. Anytime anyone constructs a religion, they construct it so that it's doing things for the people on earth
but that's marketing. That's not what that's not the central tenet of that religion in any way. There's not a single religion who puts social programs above the afterlife and God. Not a single one.
But that's the made up stuff.
Well, it doesn't matter. I understand that it's made up. That doesn't matter to my point even a little bit.
That's the made up stuff. And that's the thing that people
think
about.
They don't think it's made up.
No, but they also see, they reap the real benefits of an organization that helps people who are grossly disenfranchised from the Roman government and provides them with a support system within their neighborhood groups. This is absolutely historical fact. Absolutely historical fact. And as a matter of fact.
Doesn't matter.
And as a matter of fact, when the Catholic religion falls by the wayside, not falls by the wayside, but is challenged by the Reformation, and then the Reformation changes things. Their major tenet is by faith alone, which means a lot of the good works that have been going on in the parishes prior to the Reformation stopped. Mm-hmm. And so then this was a crisis. And guess what else spiked up when the Reformation happened and good works in the neighborhood stopped, led to additional poverty and strange old women who were living in poverty off to the fringe of the village. And guess what happened to them? Got burnt as witches. There's a correlation between Protestantism. I'm far afield, but now you've got me on a rant. Protestantism, the rise of Protestantism, and the increase in witch burnings. Because the social systems that were in place because of the Catholic Church, the very real things that happen in a parish that help people in a parish right here and right now. And I'm not talking about their spiritual belief. I'm talking about the actual practical things that are happening in alms and convents and monasteries doing good deeds and things for people. That is a real and honest thing that happens and is tangible in this life and is a benefit. Is that the main thing that they're focusing on? No, but it is the main thing that they're benefiting from.
Now, yes. Mark doesn't know anything about the history of it that I know, like at the depth that I know. But Mark has some very...
I did take Origins of Christianity.
Yeah.
For a semester.
That's really good.
Yeah, that's really good, buddy. Yeah, that's really good. Yeah.
I would have taught you that class,
that's,
my dude.
That's right, dude. I'd take your class.
Now, Mark is very smart at philosophy, and he is very smart at... Mark's just a very smart person.
I think so.
So it's a spirited debate. If you have not listened to that episode, again, episode 9, it's worth listening to.
Yeah.
But the thing that I like the best about that is I was starting to really feel my editing druthers.
Oh, no doubt. You are getting frisky your mixing board.
9 episodes in, and I didn't even have this.
No, you didn't even have the good mixing board.
And I didn't even have the good program that I edit on now. But anyway, I thought some really good editing.
Real slick edits, transitions.
Why do you think you're a... what did you say?
I am an expert in Jungian philosophy because I have listened to the Synchronicity 2 album by The Police. Or excuse me, the Synchronicity album. I have listened to the Synchronicity album by The Police like hundreds of times. So if you want to discuss, you know, the shadow on the door of a cottage on the shore of a dark Scottish loch, for example.
The thing that crawls up from the bottom.
Right, I can talk to you about that.
It was the first time that I felt really good about that. And it wasn't great. Now looking back on it, I can go, But you know, when you're in the early days of learning about
something.
You're
very tentative.
You're tentative and you're sitting there and you're like, ooh, you know, at least I know how to do this. And you just keep doing what you know how to do. And then you get to a place where you say, I can be a little creative here.
Yeah.
I can do a little bit of something else. I was feeling frisky. It prepared me for what happened in one of your other favorite episodes, in your number 2 favorite episode.
It's called An Elf and a Ranger Walk into a Bar.
Mm-hmm.
And it was our discussion of an 80s phenomenon, 70s and 80s phenomenon, Dungeons and Dragons.
That's right.
Which, you know, has a special place in my heart because I played it when I was a kid, right?
Right.
And so what we did was we brought in a guest.
One of Mark's childhood friends.
Dave Conger came in, and very smart, very funny guy.
Friend of the pod.
First, we wanted to have a discussion of the history of Dungeons and Dragons, its origins, and also its impact on society.
Right, the satanic panic.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then after that very, you know, informative discussion, which by the way, Dave brought a lot to the table there because he already knew a lot of this shit already.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a part of the moral panic was another guy who had committed suicide, and I think his name was Dallas...
James Dallas Egbert.
Holy shit, Dave.
There we go.
Yeah, I just know that. I'm not looking it up on the internet.
I believe you.
Wow, I'm impressed.
I will never doubt you again.
Student at Michigan State University. And
was he the guy... died in the steam tunnels or something?
No, they thought he went into the steam tunnels.
So, like, there's some steam tunnels under there, and students would play in them, and he kind of disappeared down one of those tunnels one day and then reappeared the next day. Apparently he went to a gaming con that was in town, and I guess, you know, part of what was going on at this convention was D&D, maybe some other games. And then I think it was months later he committed suicide, and somehow they drew the connection that his briefly appearing at a con that had D&D at it led him to
almost correlation spiral equals into suicide. Causation.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and then the truth about that though was that he was actually an exceptionally bright young man who had he went to college at like age 15 or 16 and had a plethora of issues that were not related to Dungeons and Dragons.
And then I dungeon mastered an adventure for Christina and Dave. Mm-hmm. So I had them both roll characters beforehand and select their classes and their name and everything. So we had Silric, the ranger, which was Dave's mm-hmm. character. Mm-hmm. And then who did you roll up there, Christina?
Shofra.
Shofra, the elf mage, or magic user, I guess they called it back in D&D. And we sent them on a little adventure.
As we pick up our story, it is late afternoon, and you're clattering down this kind of, it's a fairly wide avenue, you know, it's a good 25, 30 feet wide, but there are, of course, rocks and cracks everywhere. So Basil's doing his best to avoid those. He, as we're clattering down, he's, you guys doing all right back there? It's a bit bumpy, isn't it? So to your left, we're at a sort of a narrow spot in the road. So to your left is just, you know, rocky surface, some scrub brush, bits of snow hanging onto some ledges. And to your right, it's about 10 feet of road and then empty space. So this is, you know, it's a little hairy. If you have a fear of heights, don't look down. And you see there are a number of guards stationed ahead trying to direct the wagons away from some of the sketchier parts of the path. As you come around a bend, Basil begins to, of course, chatter again. He said, well, that was not that bad. I mean, you know, we've got through it, didn't we? And then he chokes, coughs, and an arrow sprouts from the side of his throat. So he topples over. You hear screams up ahead. Basil falls with the reins for the horses still in his hand, and the horses bolt.
Right.
And it was so much. First of all, I felt so nostalgic playing Dungeons and Dragons again, even though I was completely disorganized. But I had, like, you know, I had an adventure planned out that they, of course, wrecked in the first 30 seconds, and you have to start improvising. This is Christina's first time playing Dungeons and Dragons, which, by the way, she did very well.
Aww.
For a rookie.
Yeah, well, it was a great adventure. We had loads and loads of fun. Absolutely. The problem with that episode is that it did take us many, many times. We were still trying to learn how to get the sound right for remote episodes.
Yeah.
And so we found this great program, but something happened.
Christina fucked something up.
No, I didn't. The program, well, I guess I must have.
Yeah, I mean, it's a program. It can't fuck up.
And Dave was very gracious and just hung in there like a champ.
Yeah, we're like, Dave, we have bad news. you have to re-record your part. And he's like, okay, no problem.
We've had a number of really great guests. We are grateful to all of the guests that have come on the show. It is hard to guest with us, I would imagine.
Yeah, I would think so.
Because we have a rhythm and it has to be difficult to interject.
And I tend to talk over people, so mm-hmm. I'll just steamroll you probably.
Yeah, but really I think both of us would.
Yeah.
Because we have a rhythm, because we're used to doing what we do, right? Yeah. Okay, so that's your second favorite. My second favorite episode is Man Overboard, The Escapism of Yacht Rock, which is episode number 49. That is the first episode where we dubbed ourselves Gen Extemporaneous.
That's right.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Gen Extemporaneous. That's right, we have rebranded. Same show, same premise. We're just leaning into the fact that everything we talk about, we kind of bring a Gen X vibe to. And a lot of the stuff that we talk about is Gen X related.
I mean, we obviously knew the songs existed, right? But then we discovered that there was a genre created by, you know, these YouTube content creators. But they basically called a certain kind of 70s and 80s soft rock.
74, I think we did it 74 to 84.
We made it arbitrary.
It was arbitrary because it can be 74 to 86. It's just
whatever.
But, yeah.
But it has to have certain characteristics, and they called it yacht rock because a lot of the performers at that point, if you look at their album art, it's just a guy standing on a boat, right?
Or looking out to the sea.
Yeah, exactly. or just a boat on the sea if you're Christopher Cross,
right?
You know, with a bird. And it's just, you know, it's fun, smooth.
Smooth.
It's got to be smooth.
It's got to be smooth.
And, you know, it's got the, it's almost 90% of the songs have Michael McDonald involved with it somehow. Because he really.
The king of yacht.
Because it was that California sound, right? That what they call the doobie bounce.
Yeah, the doobie bounce. It's a West Coast, really a West Coast sound. Yeah. Although there are some Southeast, East Coast guys that eke into it. But yeah, largely. And it's, they say, what we learned in that episode in my research is that the Sloop John B. is considered one of the first yacht rock songs by
the Beach Boys.
The Beach Boys.
Love that song.
Okay, so why do I like Man Overboard so much? Number one.
Subsequently, and you're not wrong, they do have a podcast, Beyond Yacht Rock and Yacht or Nyacht, where they determine whether or not, is it a yacht rock song or is that yacht or nyacht?
I don't know how you do that podcast without violating all kinds of, of copyright infringement, but good.
I thought that it was hilarious that I mispronounced nyacht.
Okay, so these guys who invented this, who coined the phrase yacht rock, would also have in their episode, and they would rate them, whether they're yacht
or not.
Or N-Y-A-C-H-T.
Yeah.
Which Christina kept insisting to call nyacht.
Nyacht. I don't know why I did that, but Mark didn't correct me. And this is something that's interesting that I have noticed. There are things that I will mispronounce, and Mark won't.
Let it go.
He will not correct me, and I think it's because he wants me to look stupid.
No, it is not. It's because nobody likes to have their pronunciation corrected.
I do, because I'm an autodidact. I taught myself how to read when I was really young.
Yeah.
So I don't always know how things are pronounced because I didn't learn the way that most people learn how to read.
But the funny thing is even after I told you how it was pronounced, you still kept saying nyacht.
No, not during that episode. You didn't tell me.
No,
after the episode.
No, I just
after
meant
the
life.
Episode. Yeah. No, I don't still. I think it's funny that I say that.
But that was one thing. Okay. What else?
The other thing I liked about it was just incorporating the music and talking about the music. It just felt so good. And by that time, we were into by episode 49, I had all this mixing board. I really felt like I was getting much better at the editing.
Yeah.
There are still some times where it's not perfect, but it's much better. Yeah. And so I just felt like I had that knocked. I had an understanding of all of the technical stuff. God, 49 episodes in. That's really sad.
Not at all.
And I could really just relax and enjoy.
Did you say you had it nyacht?
Nyacht. I just felt like I could enjoy what we do.
Yes.
I could just enjoy.
It only took you almost a year. Yeah.
Yeah.
To enjoy
almost
the process.
52 weeks. I remember that one because that's episode 49. In a couple of episodes on from 49, we're going to enter into a fray that we are still in. Feel like there's a lot of pressure because of that fray. And we're going to get there. We're going to talk about that. But for me, that was really a carefree moment in time. And I felt like, woo, I can do this. And I get it.
Do you know how long it took me to be carefree?
Like 2 episodes.
Yeah, that's about it. I've been carefree for 99 episodes.
God bless you. I'm lucky. Lucky you. I wish I had someone that was doing all the work. And
wouldn't that be great?
All I'd have to do is show up.
Well, you don't.
Okay, so let's talk about your number one favorite episode.
Episode 67, MTV and the Dollar That Changed the 80s.
That arc is accidental 80s.
These are unlikely events that occurred that changed the direction of pop culture or history or economics, whatever it was, in the 80s. We decided to talk about MTV, a subject near and dear to my heart. Christina found this great book about its founding and how it came about and how a single dollar really decided whether MTV would have been a thing or not. The idea was, we have to get rock stars like Mick Jagger to go and make a promo that says, I want my MTV. And we're going to ask kids to call their cable companies, and this is going to really ignite a firestorm, or we will go out of business. It's one of those.
One of those two things.
We're pretty sure. So one of the head executives over at MTV knew Mick, and he's like, okay, I'm going to go try to get Mick. So he flies over to wherever the hell Mick was.
Paris.
Paris, yeah. And he waits around for Mick. And eventually Mick comes in and he's like, so Mick, here's what we want. We're starting this music video channel. Oh, cool, cool, cool. And we want you to tape I Want My MTV. And he's like, oh, so it's like a commercial. He's like, no, it's not really a commercial. It's we're just trying to promote our, yeah, it's a we're trying to promote our business. He's like, that's a commercial. I don't do commercials. He's like, well, I remember seeing you, you know, I don't know what he was pimping, some Japanese soda or something.
It was
something.
A fragrance, and his entire tour had been sponsored by
he's like,
fragrance.
So you do commercials. You just need to get paid for them. He's like, okay, yeah, you got me there. So he's like, so how much are you going to pay me? He's like, Mick, we have no money. He's like, I don't know. I don't really know. He's like, all right, you know what, Mick? I have a dollar in my pocket. And he takes out the dollar and he slaps it on the table. You want to get paid? There, you're getting paid. That's all I've got. And Mick's like, you know what? You're a funny little man. I will do it.
I will do it. And he did it.
He did it.
He did it that same day.
Yeah, they're like, okay. He's like, when do you want to shoot it? He's like,
right now.
I have a camera in my pocket. Let's do it. So they shot him saying,
America, demand your MTV. I want my MTV.
I want my MTV.
I want my MTV.
Call your cable company and say, I want my MTV.
Right, absolutely. Without that dollar, never would have happened. We would never have had MTV, and at least not in the form that it was in. I loved MTV, and I spent so much, just an ungodly amount of time watching MTV, because in college, in the student center, there was a TV room, but we just called it the MTV room, because that TV, unless it was Super Bowl or something like that, was on MTV. And I just really, really loved talking about that as a cultural force, because it was a huge, huge cultural force in the 80s,
uh-huh.
Right? It changed the way movies and TV shows were done. It influenced fashion and music. Duran Duran doesn't become nearly as big as they were without MTV.
Absolutely.
Obviously.
You're
and
right.
Most of those bands, even the Police, who have, you know, arguably more serious music cred, were nowhere near as big without MTV.
Uh-huh.
It just had such a huge effect. So I love that episode. I think it was funny and just super interesting. Like the tidbits you came up with for the research were great. And I just loved thinking about, you know, that time when MTV was the center of my cultural universe. I would do three more MTV episodes if you wanted to.
I love those kinds of episodes. I love the pop culture 80s episodes. My number one episode, Girl Shit is the Best Shit.
Yes, that's a very good episode.
Female relational aggression. And that's episode number 73. And that one is, of course, near and dear to my heart because I'm a gender studies person and historian. And I've looked at how women, and of course, I'm a woman.
I've noticed that about you.
I operate within that
sphere.
Yeah. I've been a part of it. I've done it. I've been aggressive as a woman. I've done things where I've like ganged up on people. I'm not proud of that. I have done it where I am personally aggressive towards a person, like individually aggressive towards a person.
Yeah.
I think that's more fair, right? Like if you're, because of course we're human beings and somebody's going to anger you. And I think it's more fair if you go directly to a person.
Like I went to Kevin Sorbo today.
Just like you did. And say,
Hercules.
And say, knock it off. And if you don't knock it off, this heat is going to continue.
It's going to continue.
What I am not a huge fan of is when women use their friendship as a lever,
yeah,
or leverage to intimidate other women. How does it all play out? Calling names, body shaming, slut shaming, attempts, and this is the real one. Attempts to isolate from friend groups.
But then as girls get older, it becomes not just I'm going to not be your friend anymore, but I'm going to make everyone you know not be your friend anymore so that you're completely isolated and you have no one. The reason why these aggressions are so painful is that for girls, relationships are critical to their social and moral development, to their healthy development. And so that fear of losing each other and the actual loss itself is really devastating to them.
It's fair enough to say if you're doing this, if this is who you are, we can't be friends. We can't be friends. That's fair, right? Like, because yeah, that's a boundary. If you don't do this, I will take my friendship away, but I not only will take my friendship away, I will take the friendship of all of your other friends.
Yeah.
I'm going to influence your other friends. And we see that happening a lot in this one of the spaces on Twitter where
we interact, there is a lot of female relational aggression. And we actually, at this moment, during this recording, I am the, what do you want to say, like the object of derision and female aggression, where people are trying to, you know, do things to be nasty or whatever and intimidate. Thank you very much, because you're making me a nice little episode coming up. The thing is that this episode for me was very important because I was able to talk about how it works. Even when people think they're being supportive of a cause, they may be handling it in an aggressive and nasty way.
You know, I'm down with that.
And so that is why I really love this episode. And this episode comes out of the crisis of meaning arc, tied to a very specific thing. And we're going to get to that, which is the fandom of William White. So it's not about that specifically, but it does.
It's where you got a lot of your
draws from ideas. It. Right. Yeah. Right. So that's what I like about that episode. It's just really gets into feminism. It gets into some history stuff. That's my jam. And what can I tell you? I love it.
Girl shit.
It is. Girl shit is the best shit. And it is. Girl shit by far is the best shit.
Yeah, guys are boring. They punch each other and then go, you know, hang out and watch football and drink beer.
As you
women
said,
will claw at each other from the shadows for years.
And the cold open of that episode actually is one where we are having an argument. Let's talk about cold opens. First of all, cold opens are segments of the podcast that generally I can take out without disrupting the flow of the rest of the show. Right. So they're kind of standalone jokes that either you tell or that we're having this funny conversation. Okay. Yes. It used to be that I would just, you know, we'd be recording and I'm focused on recording. When I'm recording, I'm recording. Now, when I'm recording, I can hear my editing as I'm recording.
Like,
so I'm
God,
thinking
is Mark
ahead.
Ever going to say something funny enough for the cold open?
No, it's not that. Because you always do. There's always something that I can say or that I can put up there. I hear them now when they happen. And so some of the best ones, I know when we're doing it, I think to myself, this is the cold
open.
A lot of times I'll say to you, guess what? Here's the cold open. Let's talk about our five top cold opens. First of all, number five comes from our episode, Let's Go to Hell, Dante's Inferno, and nominees for Lucifer's Mouth. Here's another episode that I was underappreciated.
Underappreciated. Perhaps it's, you know, maybe our audience just isn't all that literary.
It could be. And I love the history stuff. So I get very attached to the history stuff or stuff that I've studied in the past. This episode is one of the cold opens where I actually make the joke. But Dante comes along. He's a Florentine. He decides, I'm going to write.
Now, is that somebody who just has wild sex all the time?
On a bed of spinach.
Yes. Oh, Christine, you know what? The union is going to be contacting you, because this whole taking jokes from me is not, this is not going to stand. I mean, that was very funny and therefore in violation of my contract. That was good. And I hate you. That's a very funny joke.
It is. And you were pressed.
I was a little upset because honestly, that's my thing. I don't go around, you know, saying, oh, let me edit this or whatever, which I never will.
He never would. There are times where I'm getting into the car at the end of the night and I think, oh, I wish he knew how to edit, because maybe I'm not feeling like I want to or whatever. There's never a day off, everyone. When it's time, there sometimes is. It'll be like, I can't do it. We've got to re-promote or whatever else. But yes, so that was one
You're
of the
times. You're the Dunkin'
times.
Donuts guy. You're like, ugh, it's time to make
it's
the edits.
It's time to make the edits. And that was one of the ones where I made a good joke.
You did. It was very funny.
I think the second best one, or the fourth best one, was at the beginning of, and here again is a crisis of meaning arc. It was about incels.
Yeah. He wrote a blog post and suggested in that post that involuntary celibacy and sexual inequality in general.
Incel, bop, shwop, doo, wop.
Weird.
Incel, bop, shwop, doo. Can't get no girls. Incel, bop, shwop, doo, wop. You have to cut out all my singing.
I'm not going to cut it out. But that's going to be the cold open.
I mean, I think that.
I mean,
just
you didn't expect a Hansen joke there, did you? That was unexpected. I'm sure. Nobody expects the Hansen joke.
I love that. And it just sets off. Here's the thing.
What's the thing?
That joke sets off a very serious episode. It's a terrible culture, right? Yeah. And it is an online thing. And it really, as we talked about in that episode, we think falls under this umbrella of crisis of meaning. Because these are guys who are just
kind of lost.
Lost.
They don't feel like they belong. You know?
They're not funny. That joke was funny, but they're not funny because they're dangerous.
Yes.
Because what can happen with those kinds of guys is what you see where, you know, the just hateful things towards races and genders and all of the rest. But additionally, those are the guys who are going to January 6th.
Up into a clock tower somewhere.
Yeah, they're going to, and they do that. They go up and they're the ones that will do mass shootings. That's the other thing that they will do is mass shootings. And it's
really kind of ramped up with online relationships, right? Because these guys can sit in their basement, talk to other guys who also can't get girls or
have
rough family life or whatever is going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
But instead of just being sad, they become hateful and resentful.
And they have a beautiful platform for it with places like 4chan and 8kun or whatever ended up being where QAnon showed up, whatever.
Sure. So, Discord, all these other
places. All these other places. There are all of these sort of underbellies of the internet where they can go and congregate and share these ideas and cheer each other on. So it was terrible, but a very... I mean, this sounds bad, but it's a really good opening.
Yeah.
All right. Number three, Tiger Beat to Tiger King, the making of a Gen X fandom. Okay. We're going to talk more in depth about this, but that cold open was gold. That was episode 53.
Yeah.
And this is a joke. So Mark was sitting and saying, I can't remember what I had. I had a joke. And he's like, God damn it. I forgot the joke.
I forgot. I couldn't come up with it for my life. I'm like, it was really good.
It was a good what was joke.
Wow.
So the difference between fandom and stand-up, you can't laugh already. I haven't even told the joke.
I can't because
I prepared this joke.
Your face looks so...
I'm so excited that I remembered my joke.
He's just so excited to tell this joke. Come on.
Fandom
yes.
is Tiger Beat. Stand-up is Tiger King. Okay.
That was worth the wait.
Wasn't it? Now you know why I was high-fiving myself in my head when I thought of that joke.
God damn, that was a good one.
Thanks, girl. Fantastic. I appreciate it.
You know what the cold open just became?
Yeah.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, all right. So when you hear that cold open, he has been saying to me previously, and I've edited it all out, he's saying, I've forgotten the joke. God damn it. I forgot that I had a good joke. And then all of a sudden he goes, wait, I remembered the joke. So I'm laughing in anticipation
of this joke. And I'm like, wow, I hope this joke is actually funny because this is a big buildup. And I did the thing where I look to one side, I look to the other, and then I tell the joke,
Which you'll hear. And then at the end, if you notice, he says, I go, good job. And he goes, thanks, girl.
Thanks, girl.
That's the pause in that is the thing that set me off. And I was howling with laughter listening to that.
Yes.
And that joke came really kind of into the episode. It wasn't like in the middle of the episode end of the episode. It was early on, but it was not at the beginning. So the second most popular that we debated, this was kind of like a tie for one. There's really two that are tied for first place.
I love
place.
This.
You
next
love
one.
This next one. All right. So that we're going to go back to episode 6, which is Boob Juice.
Yes.
And Mark loves this cold open.
Because it's me.
So they go to her garage or their basement or wherever they have all their refrigerators, and she opens it up. And I don't know if you remember seeing The Matrix when they unveil the armory and all these thousands and thousands of guns are flying by them. This is what it's like in her refrigerator. She opens it up and it's like, you know, like a bat cave of boob milk. Just wall to wall frozen parcels of milk. I don't. It
boob
looks
juice.
Like
I really like boob
thing,
juice.
Yeah, and the thing is, they're using it in all their cooking. The kids drink it exclusively, from what I can tell. She's donating it to milk banks. She's selling it online, and yet she has 1,000 gallons of milk in her basement.
I know,
what is going on with this woman?
Oh my God.
Is this some kind of superpower?
husband. Her husband is like,
I think her husband's just like, you know what? I had no choice. I just had to get into it. So now you guys want an omelet? Can you imagine the camera crew there? Like, they're filming. The guy's like, hey, you want some eggs? And they're like, you know what, bro?
We're good. No, we're good. We're good. All right, now, when I tell you that what you just listened to had me, I was crying laughing listening to that. I was sitting there and I was like,
it's a nice image, right? The whole, you know, Matrix thing.
Matrix. And it's just how you present it to me, which is you say it and then it like escalates and escalate. And you're like, they're drinking it exclusively from what I can tell. They're using it in all of their cooking.
They
and
are.
It's just like, it like keeps escalating and escalating. And it is such a well presented joke to me.
Yeah.
Now, everybody who's listening to this might be going, the fuck? But to me, that is, and I guess maybe that's it.
My best laugh track. That the material for that episode was just so rich.
Yeah.
And fatty. filled with protein and lipids.
Yeah. Fuck, I can't. But it just, the
there was so much, there was so
the
much
lipid.
Material in that episode. That's so, right. But I do love that open, but you did make a good case for number one.
I did. Well, and I'm going to call this a tie for number one. Okay. So the other one is one of the episodes that I think we both really loved doing.
Yeah.
We loved the research. We watched the episode together. I did some other additional background research, but so did you.
As you are wont to do.
Yeah, but so did you in this episode. I know, shocking. You actually did some Googling.
Whatever it is about the Beatles, I don't know what it is, but it just touches me in a certain way.
Mark gets really...
I get emotional.
He does. Like, let's get him talking about John, and he'll be weeping here in a moment.
I know, we don't want that.
Well, not just John. It's the relationship between Paul and John. Yeah. All right. So this episode is called Who's Your Walrus Now? It's episode 64. And it is our reaction to the Beatles Get Back documentary.
Right. Which was excellent.
It was fantastic. It was like 8 hours, but it was so good. The cold open was hilarious, but it is actually a cold open that I directed. Do you remember this part of it?
No.
You initially started doing that cold open with Paul's accent.
Oh, yes.
And I said to you,
that's an excellent idea.
And I said, don't do it with Paul's accent.
Yeah.
And I pulled you back from that, and you did it just how you did it.
Yeah.
And that was the joke. So that doesn't happen often. That I think I can think of maybe... that's it. I think
because I don't take direction well.
No, he doesn't. Everyone, my God. But I think that's the only time that I said to you, Mark,
try this joke this way.
Do it with just your regular voice. It'll be funnier.
I don't know about that.
No, mainly because your Paul accent isn't on point.
Well, neither's yours.
But I've never tried to do Paul's accent.
That's probably why. We're terrible at it. Paul was all over the place. Paul, let's just say Paul was ambivalent. He had a lot of creative ennui.
Paul struggled.
Paul was like, I can't get my head around it, but I understand what you're saying. Well, it's got to be one or the other. He's like, I don't know. I hear what you're saying.
And I agree with everything.
I agree with everything you say, except I disagree with everything and I can't understand anything. So what I'm going to say is I am both yes and no here. Okay. It's like, Paul, what in the fuck are you talking about?
And it's like every time Paul gets into an extended conversation,
it's just literally circular.
He's yeah. like, exactly.
And John's trying to be cool. He's like, yeah.
John was just high.
Yeah.
So
which you'd have to be to follow that conversation. I don't blame him. John's like, you know what? I was gonna try to stay straight, but then Paul starts talking. I'm like, I just gotta do some smack.
Snip some heroin.
I gotta do
everyone.
Something. Yeah.
All
and
right.
Yoko's like, ay, 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 ay. Fuck. There's
wailing.
So many whales from Yoko.
That's literally the closed caption says Yoko wails.
Yeah. Yeah, and she was. She was wailing like a banshee.
She was. That one is another one where tears literally rolling down my eyes as I
And we do that joke like even just with ourselves.
With ourselves, yeah.
Off air.
It was so funny. And even still now, like we'd see Paul, we'd be like, well, we did because we talked about it in Gen Extemporaneous After Dark.
After Dark.
That's right.
It's our Patreon podcast, by the way.
All right. So quickly, let's talk about our most notorious episodes.
Here they are.
Here they are. All right. So we were going along. We had a fine podcast. I came across in May of 2021, a young guy from Canada who was a TikTok guy. And this is when we were on TikTok and I was working on TikTok. I was trying to understand on TikTok how to market our podcast. And we had tried one way. It didn't really work. I didn't do it the right way. Then I opened up my own TikTok account and I started engaging and the growth was organic.
Yeah.
And while I was doing that, I came across this kid who's a TikTok creator and he kind of hit this crest of a wave on Memorial Day in 2021.
Middle of COVID. Yeah. Right?
And his name is William White, good looking young guy, lip syncing to 80s songs. And he looked like he was the combo of Rob Lowe and Patrick Swayze, maybe, or yeah, whatever. In my mind, he reminded me of Jake Ryan because, of course, that was my teenage heartthrob in high school. Okay. I started following this. Now, I was not invested in him the way other women my age were, but he grew a huge Gen X fandom. And that is, we mentioned from Tiger Beat to Tiger King, it's within the crisis of meaning, but there were multiple episodes about this kid because that's where he fit in.
Yeah. And it was really more about the fandom.
It was about the fandom. It wasn't about the young man. We have never been anything as a podcast besides supportive of what he does.
Right.
We think that he should earn his money the way that he does. He's earning an incredible amount of money off of a very small fandom, about 2,000 dedicated fans who are sending him large, large, large amounts of money.
Yeah.
And so we just started watching this fandom. I did. And I went to Mark and I said, there's this thing that's going on. And I think that this is going to be a thing. I really think we've got to do some episodes about this. And that's what we did. And we started out by talking about nostalgia. And then we morphed into these three episodes, which were about the fandom and the fracturing within the fandom between women who liked him but didn't sexualize him and women who sexualized him. And those women who sexualized him seemed to be forming a cult.
Yeah, kind of. I would characterize it as a proto-cult.
Well, at this point,
it's getting closer and closer to an actual cult.
At this point, I think it's there. They are embedded with his family. The creator himself and his family are positioning themselves as spiritual leaders.
Yeah.
At the time of the episodes that we did, the group that we were talking about, the Grotto Girls, who were the fan group within this fandom.
On the sexy side.
The sexy fan group within this fandom. They sent us a cease and desist order.
Before we had broadcast a single word or even decided how we were going to do it.
It was wild.
It's like, cease and desist what? We haven't even started yet.
And now what we're seeing is generally the fandom itself is really cult-like. I mean, even the people that are not in the GGs, but a lot of them are buying into what he's talking about. He's been in and out of rehab. Now he's back in. And the money keeps flowing. There's a lot of drama within this fandom. And we are in.
Oh, they are eating their own.
We are in it. So the fandom is hating on each other. There previously we talked about it as the positive side. And within the positive side were this group, the system, this cult, the Grotto Girls. And then there was a loose confederation is what we called it on the troll side. Well, we embedded ourselves in that troll side. We did that purposefully. And at this point now, that troll side, segments of that troll side have
also gone off the rails,
have turned on us.
Oh, yeah.
Which is great because they're proving a point for us. Yeah. There are women in this situation who are really not
quite right.
There's some stuff that's going on that is hard to understand. We are working with media. We have been subsequently interviewed by media, like journalists. We continue to work with them. We are observing the fandom and we have been upfront about it. I don't feel bad about the fact that we have embedded ourselves in this way. But the reality is that there are things happening in this fandom that continue to be strange. Among them is the creator who himself is 22 years old and his fan base is largely 45 to over 70, 70 plus.
Yeah.
He has a younger brother who has just recently turned 16. Previously, involved with the fandom at the age of 15 with adult women who are serving as his moderators on TikTok,
yep,
who are sending him money, who are complimenting him and saying things like, you're so hot, you're looking right, good. And then also, can I give you birthday spankings? These are, yeah, the kinds of things that are being said to a boy who is 16 years old by women who are in their middle age.
And I think what it is they've just lost perspective. You know, they project so many things onto this creator that really aren't there. They're so invested in their fandom of this kid rather than being invested in just enjoying their fandom. Now, a lot of them, not all of them, of course, but a lot of them, they've adopted it as their identity. Who are you? I'm a fan of William White. And I spend most of my day doing shit like this.
Yeah. And then you have, again, there are people that are considered haters or trolls, where even though they claim to hate him,
yeah,
they are still involved in this fandom. So they are a part of the fandom. They may be a fringe part of the fandom,
yeah,
or a negative part of the fandom, but they are involved in this fandom. There are, like I said, there are people who dislike us, particularly take shots at us for having a podcast, which is hilarious.
It is. I'm like, oh, you got us on that one.
You have sure a podcast. Do. Why don't you do a podcast? Okay. Oh, yeah.
They used to tell us, here's what you should do your podcast about.
One of the big complaints on what they call themselves now is the Love Army. The Love Army side, there are two or three, maybe four loud voices on that, yeah, side. One of them is a Texas woman. Her name is Melanie. She tried to encourage me to use what she thought was my influence,
yeah,
with the troll side and then use my podcast as a way to heal the Love Army. And the thing that's crazy, and I kept saying to her, I don't have that authority. The, yeah, authority that you think I have, I, right, do not have. But anyway, this is where we are with this group. These are our notorious episodes. These are the episodes that have brought us press.
Yep.
Listener. And attention.
A couple listeners.
And some listeners in the sense that not as many from the fandom, but people who have read about the fandom and then found our podcast through that. And then they've, right, stayed. And so we're grateful for the followers who have followed us. And those of you who are from the fandom, we're grateful that you follow us from the fandom. So, yeah, thank you very much. So, Mark, what do you think? So for me, the fandom provides me with a lot of, well, fodder, and that annoys the, sure, fandom. It's not that I talk about specifically the fandom. I talk about things like girl shit is the best shit, or, yeah, parasocial relationships. What does that mean? These are all crisis of meaning things. And so it's very informative to me in terms of what kind of subjects I want to follow. But what do you think of the fandom episodes?
One thing that's really ironic about it is that a certain segment, the people who are very upset about the podcast, are upset that it's not reflecting their voice or their perspective, mm-hmm, which is ironic because they've all been invited, for the most part, to come on and say what they want to say. We would have them on the podcast.
You could come to me and talk to me about it. And in fact, our position is much more consistent with the Love Army.
Look, it's not like one monolithic, you know, homogenous fandom. There are different individuals have different issues and problems, and not all of them are horrible people. And most of them aren't horrible.
Most of them are not horrible. And in fact, we have multiple great friends that we've made in this fandom. I've made a number of really great friends.
But in general, the fandom is just, it's a very strange phenomenon because, of course, there's always, not always, but there's often dramas in fandoms, right? Mm-hmm. You're not fanning the right way. You know, you're not a serious fan, whatever, mm-hmm, it is. I mean, the Swifties are famous.
I'm a day one. Yeah. I've been there, yeah, from the beginning. I did it as a Durrani.
Yeah, you judge people for how they fan. But this is really just a next level where there are doxing going on. There are death threats.
Against fan. It's not even... Like in the Swifties, they dox record reviewers who, yeah, give her a bad review.
Right.
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 In this situation, they're doxing people each that other. They used to, yeah, be best friends with.
Yeah.
So they know who you are because they used to be friends with, yeah, you. And then they turn around and they share your work information.
Yeah. It's, and they're bizarre, calling people's employers and their moms or whatever. I mean, there's just a lot going on.
Yeah.
The thing is, this kid is a fairly inoffensive, kind of lost puppy kind of Trouble.
He's actually, now we're discovering that he's quite a troubled young man.
Yeah. It's just they've projected all these things on this, you know, kind of nice.
Blank slate.
Yeah.
Blank slate.
Yeah. He's a nice young kid, but he's, like you said, he's a blank slate. He doesn't really have a lot of strongly formed opinions and personality, and which is fine. I mean, at 22, I'm sure I was every bit as oblivious.
Right. And he hasn't had a lot of good guidance. In fact, he's had some shady guidance. And yeah. I think that he has a lot of people who are around him that appear dodgy and shady and make him look shady and dodgy. There's a lot that's going on in this fandom. Yeah. By any means are we done with this fandom. And in fact, we're working with documentarians and other reporters to talk more about this. So, more will be coming.
It's a fascinating subject. It is unfortunately sad for some of them.
Yeah. So we are still in there and there's more going to be coming out. At a certain point, we will, you know, close the door on that situation.
I mean, it's definitely an interesting human condition kind of study.
For sure. Okay. So let's talk about where we go from here.
Oh my gosh.
So a couple of months ago, we started a Patreon and that was... per request of followers who said, you know, we'd like to support you. How can we do that? What more can we do? Is there, you know, what is there? Can we, you know, yes, share our pod. At the bare minimum, if you like us, share us with a friend. Yeah. We really appreciate getting the additional listeners. We'd love to see our listener count increase. That's a lot of fun. We are always going to run Gen Extemporaneous as ad-free. We have started our Patreon, Gen Extemporaneous.
After Dark.
And that first episode was on April 8th.
It's designed to give our listeners who want to support us something for their support, right? Mm-hmm. We're not going to just ask you just to send in money for the free podcast. So we're going to give you some more content mm-hmm. for your support. It's really focused on three types of episodes. Mm-hmm. The first type is a video Thunderdome, mm-hmm. where we have four videos on a theme. Right. And we pit them against each other. And then we grade them based on not only the quality of the video and the song, but also certain tropes that we've noticed in 80s videos.
Mm-hmm. Another one is called Internet Archaeology. And that is where we randomly generate a date and we do some research about the year that date falls in. That's my job. And then Mark does the deep dive into that exact date. And then the final kind of episode that we do.
Really just extended conversations of episodes we've had.
So that's one thing that we're doing, which is the Patreon. If you would like to follow us there, we would appreciate it. It is $5 a month for at least 3 episodes per month extra. And our address at Patreon is
patreon.com/GenExtemporaneous.
If you cannot, we super understand. And please just continue to enjoy our Gen Extemporaneous free podcast. Finally, with this podcast, Gen Extemporaneous.
Oh my God.
So one of the things that we want to continue to develop because we're enjoying it a lot is life lessons in films of the 1980s. We're going to lean in a little bit more, obviously, to the Gen X vibe. So we're going to do life lessons.
As the kids say.
Yeah. And some deeper dives into the tropes of our childhood. One of the most popular episodes that we've done recently was just kind of a fun one where we talked about really what, like growing up latchkey.
Yeah.
Now, it was a generalization. And one of the coolest things that happened after that episode is that we went, you know, on Twitter, there were lots of discussions about, yeah, like, yes, that resonates, that totally, we get it. And then also...
some negative stuff, right?
That's not what my situation was like. Or what the things that you were kind of joking about were very serious to me, particularly around the subject of discipline in the sort of corporal punishment in the 1970s and 80s. So that sparked a lot of good conversation. And I think we're gonna lean in a little bit more to that. That doesn't mean we're going to suddenly only be very heavy duty Gen X. We're still going to, it's more about topics that interest us from a Gen X perspective.
Right. Christina always likes to have an angle, something that'll illustrate something about ourselves today or something about ourselves then or the world in general and force me to participate in it.
That's true. I do. I force him. I twist his arm a lot of the time. All right, Mark, this is our 100th episode. 100 episodes.
Christina, happy centennial.
Happy centennial. Mark, I'm really proud of us, honestly. What we've done.
It's a good quality product. We enjoy doing it because they're a lot like our conversations we have otherwise, just not as, they're just more structured.
Yeah, I just don't usually bring notes to our normal
sometimes
conversations.
Sometimes you do. And I'm glad that there are people out there that enjoy listening to us, you know, shoot the shit.
Right. And that's the other thing that I want to say is thank you so much for all that you bring to our experience of this, because we do get a lot of great feedback. I get a lot of DMs on Twitter, and let's talk about our Twitter. I am at Christina Jen X on Twitter. Mark is at Mark Eats Peach on Twitter. And we have a podcast page that is growing at Extemporaneous 2. That's also on Twitter. We have a Facebook group at Gen Extemporaneous.
Check it out.
Absolutely. All right, Mark, I guess we're done on our 100th episode. So I'm just going to say bye.
Peace out, Cub Scouts.